Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with today's release of a Japanese government inquiry into the Fukushima nuclear meltdowns, which concludes that the disasters were man-made. A longtime nuclear industry insider, Arnie Gundersen, joins us to discuss how, instead of learning from the Japanese disasters, the U.S. nuclear industry had the head of the NRC forced out for trying to increase safety measures in U.S. nuclear power plants with identical reactors and similar vulnerability to earthquakes and tsunamis. Then we'll look into the politics of the critical swing state of Ohio, which President Obama visits today, along with surrogates for Mitt Romney, Tim Pawlenty, and Bobby Jindal. An expert on election law and civil rights, Daniel Takagi, a professor of law at Ohio State University, joins us to discuss the unprecedented attention and money pouring into Ohio, a state with a recent history of voting irregularities. Then finally, we'll go to Mexico City for an update on the disputed election recount of last Sunday's vote. Tim Johnson, the Mexico City bureau chief for McClatchy Newspapers, joins us to discuss mounting evidence of flagrant vote buying by the PRI, whose candidate Peña Nieto won in part thanks to gift cards that were redeemed at grocery chains now with empty shelves and lots of unhappy customers who found the gift cards were only worth a fraction of what the PRI had promised them for their vote. Joining us now is Arnie Gundersen, a former nuclear industry senior vice president who has coordinated projects at 70 nuclear power plants around the country. He's currently chief engineer at Fairwinds Associates and an independent consultant on nuclear and radiation issues to the NRC, congressional and state legislatures, and government agencies and officials in the United States and abroad. Welcome to Background Briefing, Arnie Gundersen.
Hi, thank you for having me.
And the Japanese parliament have come out with a report on the Fukushima nuclear disasters, saying that they were profoundly man-made disasters, that they could have been foreseen, could have and should have been foreseen and prevented and mitigated by more effective human response. Pretty strong condemnation for a country with a government that's pretty much been in bed with the nuclear industry.
It really was. It amazes me that they were so forthright in their assessment. You know, it's hard to look in the mirror and describe what you see, and they did a very good job of it. You know, it's an ugly picture that they painted, but it certainly was accurate.
And you have consulted with the Japanese Parliament, the Diet, on this. What was your sense when you talked to the people on the panel?
I was over there in February, and we spoke for about 3 hours. And they were concerned as citizens. It wasn't about the power of being a regulator, although clearly they had that too. You know, they have seen their country brought to its knees, and they really were genuinely concerned and wanted to hear the truth. So the translator I was working with said, okay, let's tell it like it is.
Well, one of the things that came out in the Japanese government report on the Fukushima nuclear disaster is that they blame cultural conventions and a cultural reluctance to question authority in Japan. Was that ever discussed, or was there a sense that that was a part of the problem?
Well, the item I spent the most time on in that area was the issue of they knew for probably two decades that the plant could not withstand a tsunami of the size that Mother Nature could likely throw at it. There were independent experts outside of this nuclear priesthood that were telling the Japanese that that the plant was under design. But it's a cloistered group, and we talked about that within the agency that regulates in Tokyo Electric, they all agreed to sing one song, even though the experts were saying the opposite. The Japanese, the Diet members I spoke to wanted to hear that. So the root cause of the accident occurring was the fact that they just didn't listen to anybody who was outside of their little club. There's the root cause of the issue not mitigated as fast enough is a separate cultural issue.
Well, let's begin with the tsunami. And it's in an earthquake-prone region, prone to tsunamis. It's almost incomprehensible to me that the backup generators were not built up high, because if you look at all of the news footage, and it's quite extraordinary, the news footage of these tsunami waves just wiping out this whole town, and we've all seen these graphic pictures. All of the people on, you know, second floor survived. You know, it's pretty obvious that if you would have built them up a little bit, they wouldn't have been knocked out so readily.
It's actually not unique to Fukushima. There were four different reactor sites. Fukushima Daiichi had six reactors. Daini had four. Okagawa had three, and Tokai had one. And they had between them 36 diesels. They lost 24 of them in the tsunami. So this could easily have been 14 nuclear plants in a meltdown, and not the three that we had. They were under-designed up and down the coast, not just at Fukushima Daiichi.
Well, let me just remind the audience again, if I may. I'm speaking with Arne Gundersen, a former nuclear industry senior vice president who has coordinated projects at 70 nuclear power plants in the United States and has consulted with the NRC, congressional and state legislatures, and government agencies and officials in the U.S. and abroad. And we're talking about the Japanese government's report today, issued today, on the Fukushima nuclear disaster. Of course, it's a bit ironic that they should announce this scathing report about a kind of culture of collusion between the government bureaucracies and the nuclear industry. And on Sunday, the first power reactor was restarted in the town of Ohai in Fukai Prefecture. So here we are, on the one hand, condemning the way nuclear power is operated in Japan, and on the other hand, restarting power plants.
That's frightening. And, you know, the cultural issues don't get changed overnight. And in fact, they still have not separated out their regulator from the agency that it reports to, which is a promoter of nuclear power. So, all of the cultural issues identified in the Diet report are present right now. They're not resolved, and they're years before they will be resolved. But yet the Japanese government just authorized the Ohai plant to start up. In light of this report, I think it certainly gives ammunition to the public and to those people who are concerned. I can't see how Ohai can be allowed to start up, given the content of this report.
But it's happened. It started on Sunday.
Well, hopefully they'll change their mind. You know, even now, there are seismic experts who are telling the authorities within the Japanese government that there's six faults that run directly underneath the power plant. Some of them actually cut through the cooling water pipes that are designed to cool the plant in the event of an accident. So the Japanese government has had ample warning of the risk of Ohai, and yet they're still starting it up. I don't think anything has changed in Japan despite this report.
Well, there's also reports coming out, Arne Gundersen, that the actual earthquake, not just the tsunami, but the earthquake damaged the reactors at Fukushima.
You can actually see that. In Unit 4, Unit 4 has buckled. Now, on the bottom, there's a bulb. And it's about a 2-inch bulb on a couple of the sides on the bottom, and it's one-third of the way up. And structural engineers call that a first-mode Euler strut buckle, and it only happens from an earthquake. So here the Tokyo Electric acknowledging the building has bowed, but yet at the same time they're saying that it withstood the structural stresses it was placed upon. The bigger story there is that if they admit that their seismic codes are wrong, it affects obviously every nuclear plant in Japan, but also every nuclear plant in the world. And it's an area where the industry wants to avoid scrutiny.
Well, let's turn to the rest of the world, and particularly the United States, Arne Gundersen, since you're a former nuclear industry senior vice president who's coordinated projects at 70 nuclear power plants here in the United States. I know that you're very familiar with the boiling water reactor, the Westinghouse boiling water reactor, that several of which melted down at the Fukushima Daiichi plant following the earthquake and tsunami. We have, of course, here south of us in Los Angeles, San Onofre, that's been closed now for 4 months because of excessive wear on pipes that were just as they reinstalled a series of generators, and apparently they stuffed a lot of extra steam pipes in to get a greater output, and those steam pipes had unusual and rapid wear, resulting in a radiation leak. But there's two things about that plant that seem similar to Fukushima. One is, actually, Fukushima was a little inland. San Onofre is right on the bluff, facing the Pacific Ocean. They built a 30-foot cement wall to prevent a tsunami from hitting the plant, but there's nothing to prevent the tsunami from going around the wall, which is only as long, only covers the length of the plant. So that makes absolutely no sense. And that's, the generators are right there. The diesel generators are right there in the open. So that's one question of how different are we here, particularly at San Onofre, in terms of a tsunami problem. And two, the NRC a few months ago chastised the operators of the San Onofre plant for creating an atmosphere in which employees suffered retaliation if they reported safety concerns. So how different is that from what we're talking about with Japan, where you have a culture of collusion?
Well, I'm an expert for Friends of the Earth on the San Onofre plant. The wall in front of the plant is 30 feet high at low tide, but it's only 14 feet high at the highest tide. So essentially a 3-meter tsunami can swamp the wall. But it's not about the diesels at San Onofre. It's about the water pumps that are right along the water. If the tsunami were to hit those pumps, even though the diesels are in fact placed much higher than they are, if you don't have the water to cool the diesel, then you'll lose the diesel anyway. So we call it service water. The pumps along the ocean are vulnerable to a tsunami, which will have the exact same effect. You won't be able to cool the plant. On the issue of whistleblowers, I consult all over the country, and perhaps twice a year somebody will contact me with a concern that they don't feel management is adequately addressing. But I've been working on San Onofre now for 3 months, and I've had 4 people from San Onofre contact me with concerns. I've never seen that before. Now, I've passed those concerns on to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission after making sure that the person is protected. But I have to agree, based on my personal experience, that there's a cultural problem at San Onofre, and people are afraid to tell management the truth.
Well, again, that has echoes of this Japanese report, doesn't it? I mean, I don't see the difference here in terms of bureaucratic collusion. And you also, don't you have the same problem with the NRC, that it's both a regulatory agency and a promoter of nuclear power?
Well, let's get to the cultural collusion within San Onofre first.
Sure.
These steam generators that had the leaks were designed in 2006. And that's exactly at the high point of their whistleblower complaint period. They had 187 whistleblowers at San Onofre. In a comparable period, the next worst plant has about 5. So they had literally 30 times more whistleblowers at San Onofre than any other plant. And at the time this generator was being designed, it's obvious they had issues with their employees. Now, moving on to the NRC, the NRC is a captured regulator. This example just recently where the nuclear industry, put pressure on the chairman of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission and dragged him in front of Congress. And the guy resigned. All he was a regulator trying to regulate. But the industry didn't like that, and through congressional pressure was able to get him thrown out. So these problems start at the top. They start at Congress. both Democrat and Republican, they are basically pro-nuclear. And that pressure then filters down on the commission. There hasn't been a commissioner in the last 20 years that hasn't been vetted and approved by NEI, which is the trade organization for nuclear power.
But in the case of Gregory Jasko, who resigned under pressure, he apparently was trying to take the lessons of Fukushima into account. And the nuclear industry in this country simply wanted to pretend that Fukushima didn't happen.
That's right. I met with Chairman Jasko twice in the last couple of months on San Onofre issues. And I can assure you he doesn't want to knee-jerk reaction shut a plant down. But he wants to apply the law when the law is applicable. And his other commissioners desperately want to keep these plants running, even if it means bending the law or ignoring the law. Now, Chairman Jasko, on the issue of the Fukushima modifications, was adamant that that these modifications need to be made promptly and thoroughly, and the industry needs to take them seriously. But yet his fellow members of the commission, and there's five of them, voted them down and delayed these decisions, and also inserted themselves into the process where if the staff came forward with a concern, the commission reserves the right to overthrow its own staff.
So this commission, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, the leader of which, the head of which, Gregory Jasko, was pressured out, and the White House have put up a woman, right? I can't quite remember her name, to replace him. I don't know whether she's going to be any better. But one of the bizarre things about what they complained about Jasko was that he didn't vote with everybody. And the reason he didn't vote with everybody was that he was actually voting for safety and the rest of them weren't. I mean, it's an amazing thing that they could play roulette with the American people with this evidence of what happened in Japan. And now what's happening in San Onofre? Because that wasn't a tsunami. That was just something was wrong with the way they installed those new steam generators and added the extra pipes. And yet the NRC and Darrell Issa, the congressman from the district, are putting pressure to restart that reactor when it's clearly not safe.
No, I think you're right. I've been reviewing lots of reports in the last month, and it's amazing to me. The NRC said they were going to do a root cause analysis, and that means getting to the bottom of the problem at San Onofre. And it's crystal clear to me they didn't, and nor did the people at San Onofre. They dug a little bit, and then when it got to an area they didn't want to go in, they literally stopped analyzing, and the NRC let them get away with it. I was down 2 weeks ago at a meeting down there with the exit meeting of the augmented inspection team. Anyway, the NRC was basically telling what they found. And they found that San Onofre deliberately ignored its vibration monitors. They could hear those pipes rattling, and they chose to do nothing about it until the pipes broke. That was one of the findings. The other finding was that they had a 400% error in the computer codes, and they didn't detect it for 6 years. So that tells me there's a gross quality assurance breakdown and a gross breakdown in the commitment to safety. You know, when you hear things rattling around in your car engine, you pull over to the side of the road. You don't wait till you blow a piston before you stop.
Well, Arne Gundersen, you know, we started out talking about the Japanese government's report came out today on the Fukushima accident, saying it was a profoundly man-made disaster and that it should have been foreseen and prevented, and its effects could have been mitigated by a more effective human response. It was held up as an example here to America's nuclear industry. The head of the NRC got fired because he tried to retrofit American plants, a lot of which have the same boiling water reactor that melted down in Japan. He got forced out because he was trying to do his job and trying to follow the extraordinarily dangerous precedents that Japan have shown us. And now we have an example right near where I'm speaking to you from of a nuclear plant that has serious problems, yet the same pressure to open them. So can you explain me this, the mentality of why this institution or this industry is so willing to risk American lives?
Well, years ago, someone coined it as a nuclear priesthood. And you either buy into the orthodoxy or you're excluded from the process. And I think that's at the root of it. This is not about science. These people are committed as an orthodoxy to nuclear power. And you know, it doesn't stop in the United States. It goes into the IAEA, the International Atomic Energy Agency. Its charter is to promote nuclear power, but yet you'll constantly hear, well, the IAEA says that Fukushima is safe. So the same problems we have in Japan and the United States are also in the International Atomic Energy Agency as well. So I don't see an easy way out of this, because there's so much money on the side of the argument to keep these plants running. I think at the end of the day, it boils down to money, though. And as alternatives come along that are cheaper, these plants will stop operating. There's an excellent Associated Press piece out just today about how San Onofre may never start up because the money doesn't work. The cost to fix is not worth the cost of replacing them with alternative power sources. I think Wall Street, at the end of the day, will make the decision that the orthodoxy doesn't want made.
Just in closing, Arne Gundersen, the Germans have shut down their nuclear power, and they're getting out of nuclear power altogether. And they are in the midst of replacing it with wind and solar, and they don't have they're a northern climate with a lot of cloud, not a lot of sun. So the Germans have, as a result, by the way, of Fukushima, that was one of the things that propelled the German government into that decision. Now, Japan, the Prime Minister, in defending the opening of these restarting of these reactors that were shut down since Fukushima, he says that they've basically got no choice. It's essential for their economy. Why can't the Japanese make the transition the Germans made?
Well, and actually, Japan has the highest industrial power costs in the world, even with the nuclear power plants. They have essentially 9 cabals of nuclear power generators, and there's no downward pressure on rates for them. The difference is the Germans shut down any plant that was built before 1978 immediately. And then they're winnowing their way off of the other dozen or so over the next 10 years. The Japanese are going cold turkey. They can make it 10 months out of the year for sure without the nuclear plants. And the question is, will they be able to get through the summer? The citizens are saying, we'll turn off our air conditioners. We don't want the risk. But the politicians are saying, if we shut these plants down for an entire summer and our citizens get through, then, oh, my God, we can actually do without nuclear power. I don't think they want to face that eventuality. But the citizens of Japan, you know, this all began with Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and they're looking at it as bookends on the shelf. So you had Hiroshima and Nagasaki on one end and Fukushima on the other, and they want it over. Yet we're seeing the government totally resistant to the pressure of citizens and still feeling the pressure from the nuclear industry.
Well, Arne Gundersen, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Arne Gundersen, who's a former nuclear industry senior vice president who has coordinated projects at 70 nuclear power plants here in the United States. He's currently chief engineer at Fairwinds Associates and an independent consultant on nuclear and radiation issues to the NRC, congressional and state legislatures, and government agencies and officials in the United States and abroad. We're going to take a brief station break and we'll be back talking about Ohio, where the president and Romney's surrogates visited today in a swing state that may turn Republican.
Earth for